It's the College Try Podcast, the most iconic college football podcast in the sports media landscape. Okay, perhaps not. But it is a college football podcast that you can nonetheless find this episode of and all previous ones of on the local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. I'm your host, Austin Price. Very happy to be here. Very happy to have gone throughout this season with you. And we're coming to the final stretch. So you're running out of opportunities to hear me say that, all right? At least to hear me say that right when the episodes drop. But speaking of that local podcast page, you can find past installments of The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You can find installments of War Eagle Weekly with myself and Bill Clark. You can also listen to ESPN Pensacola live on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. So thank you for coming along on this journey with me. And let's just get right into it. This is probably going to be our shortest episode yet, if not over the course of the entire College Try season. We've just got two games to talk about, and then we've got one to look ahead to. It's not going to be quite that bare bone, but when it comes to just the meat of these episodes a lot, that's what it's had to do with, the games that just finished and the games that are upcoming. And that count has been getting increasingly slim. So you can kind of see where this is going. If there's any episode that's going to be shorter than tonight's, it's probably going to be next Tuesday's. But even then, I'm going to be doing a look ahead to next season. So that'll give us some more to really dive into depth on. So I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. Either way, I'm not going to be talking your ears off tonight as often, or rather for as long as I usually do. But that's okay. Still got a full enough slate here for you. So let's dive right in. Looking at these semifinal games, Notre Dame squeaked past Penn State 27-24. I was right about one thing, or close enough to being right about one thing coming into this game, and that's about how many points were scored. I had Penn State winning this game 27-21, I believe. Notre Dame won it 27-24. So numerically, I felt like I was in the ballpark. Yay for me. And I had it. I thought it was going to be not a low-scoring game. When you both score in the 20s, that's pretty average. But I thought it was going to be visibly lower scoring than the other semifinal game, and turns out it wasn't. But we'll get more on that game in a little bit. For now, I want to talk about the two coaches in this game. They're polar opposites in two of the biggest storylines in college football today. First up, we'll touch on the victor, Notre Dame's Marcus Freeman. I'm not going to lie to you. If you've been following along throughout the season, you may have noticed I didn't talk too much about Notre Dame. I'd talk about them at times, but I wasn't like some big, you know, Notre Dame guy, seeing them as a contender, doing deep dives on them, hyper-analyzing. I wasn't doing any of that nonsense. And some people would maybe take that as disrespect. Didn't give Marcus Freeman his flowers when I was talking about Coach of the Year candidates, so on and so forth. But that's not what I'm wanting to devote this moment. That's not why I'm wanting to devote this moment to Marcus. That's not what this is about. It's not about apologizing for that stuff. It's about apologizing for how I felt of him away from this microphone. How I felt of him before coming into this season. I doubted Marcus. I did. Young guy, taking a blue-blooded job that Brian Kelly left in good enough shape. Don't know anything about this guy at the time of him taking the job. Gets you a 9-win season. Gets you a 10-win season. He's got losses to Marshall, a 3-win Stanford. And then he comes into this season and he loses to an 8-5 Northern Illinois, lost that game at home too. And I'm like, dude, you can't consistently win the games that don't matter. How am I supposed to sit here and pretend that you could ever win the games that do? And with that said, I felt like at the time I had reason to doubt him. But everyone else seemed to be giving this guy a type of love that I just couldn't wrap my head around. And maybe they saw something that I didn't. Maybe they saw the groundwork being laid for how great of a story he's told with this team throughout this season. It's phenomenal. He and his Irish have proven me wrong, for sure. And as I said before, Marcus Freeman, James Franklin, Notre Dame, Penn State, they are today on very opposing ends of some of the biggest stories in college football today. Marcus Freeman's on the good end, obviously, and he gets so much praise for that. Notre Dame's been phenomenal to watch. People are going to sit here and question the strength of their playoff path, and I will do some of that later. But I look at how they handled Indiana. I don't look at 27-17. I look at 27-3 with 2 minutes to go. And you can say what you want about that Indiana team, but they were clearly good. I look at how you shut down Georgia. Sure, Gunnar Stockton being in there instead of Carson Beck does put an asterisk next to it for me personally. But you still won by double digits and shut down a team that was led by a quarterback that was able to come in mid-game and take over to beat Texas. He was able to beat Texas in the SEC title game with all the more sudden of an involvement. So it's not like he's some total ignoramus, okay? That Gunnar Stockton kid, he wouldn't be playing at Georgia if he sucked at football. So to see Notre Dame shut down that Bulldogs team, that was impressive as well. The Irish deserve a lot of credit for that. And then, of course, Penn State, they were my pick to make the national title game coming out of this one, and they absolutely proved me wrong on that. So, and man, Mitch Jeter, the kicker who helped them win the game, he's been phenomenal this postseason. He sucked during the regular season. He was like a literal coin flip with how many kicks he missed. He only made like half his kicks. And then he comes into the postseason and he's kicking butt. This Notre Dame team has proven me wrong. Marcus Freeman has proven me wrong. They're winning the games that matter, something I never thought they were going to be able to do. And they're doing it one after the other. They didn't get lucky. They didn't stumble into this. They've earned it. We are seeing a Marcus Freeman-led team. We are seeing a team that has been impacted, that has been influenced, that has been led by that 30-something-year-old guy who took over for what's eventually probably going to be a college football Hall of Fame coach, Brian Kelly. He took over for them and has done the most with them in just his third season that we've seen done at Notre Dame football in years. So Marcus Freeman, I tip my cap to you. I apologize to you. You deserve all the praise in the world today. As I said, there's still some questionability surrounding your playoff path. There's certainly some questionability surrounding whether or not you're going to be able to beat Ohio State. And we'll touch on that later as well, obviously. But I look at Notre Dame just being at this stage, having made it this far, and can't help but be impressed. So once again, one last tip of the cap to Marcus Freeman. Now, as for Penn State's James Franklin, people are arguing for his firing after their semifinal exit. And I just want to tell you right now, that is not going to happen. This is why I want to talk about James Franklin. As I said, he was on the other end of he was on the other side of the coin, the other end of the spectrum. Marcus Freeman's sharing all the glory of, hey, I proved my doubters wrong, and I've done well for the Notre Dame name. James Franklin, they're looking at him. They're saying he still can't win a big game. He still can't step up when it matters most. And I wanted to touch on this because I understand the fans being upset. I understand the fans wanting him gone and questioning his legacy. But again, that's just not going to happen. And it clearly isn't when you look at this season from the school's perspective. Think about it. James Franklin, people have been talking about him not winning the big game for a while now. That's not new. That is not a sudden realization people just had. Folks have already been talking about that. And Penn State still seemed to be pretty loyal to this guy. There were no talks, no whispers about Penn State's looking for someone else, or they could look at this guy, or they may move on. No, I never heard any mainstream whispers about that. So looking at this season from a school's perspective that seems to like James as much as they do, look at how competitive Penn State was. They're not going to drop him now because he just proved to them that they can win with him. And honestly, I do see why they would come to that conclusion. This CFP hasn't gone like we expected. And if NIL is adding to the parity of college football like some claim, then you logically can't rule the Nittany Lions out. Look at how they went toe-to-toe with Notre Dame. They were knocking on the door of a college football national title game appearance. I mean, when you look at the loss to Ohio State, And you look at the loss to Oregon, and you look at this loss to Notre Dame, you got the people on social media saying, can't win the big game. But looking at it from the school's perspective, they're looking at it like, hey, man, we went toe-to-toe with Ohio State, and look at how great they are right now. They're favored to win the national title. Hey, man, we were in a competitive high-scoring game with Oregon in the Big Ten title game. We made a Big Ten title game again. And hey, man, we only lost by a field goal to a kicker that's been on fire this postseason. That was the only thing in our way from making the national title game anyway. I mean, am I some huge James Franklin fan? No. And I do think his doubters have a point, but I don't see enough negatives here to blow up what Penn State's got going on right now. If I'm them, I see them looking at this guy through the rose-tinted glass again, and I see them giving him at least a little more time to see if he's going to take advantage of where we are in college football right now. If he doesn't in the next 2 seasons, then we'll be ready to revisit this conversation, perhaps with a bit more urgency. But this is a school that has proven they're pretty loyal to James. First of all, I think we would have already heard that they let him go. With a job as big as the Penn State job, and with them being on the brink of success, big time success, they would probably be wanting to start their coaching search publicly as soon as possible. So I think just the fact that we haven't heard anything yet should tell you all you need to know. But you got to, when you're talking about decisions like these, you got to look at them from the perspective of who's actually going to make the decision. And when you look at this from the Penn State perspective, knowing what we've known about them so far, I don't see them moving off of James Franklin, and I don't think it's the end of the world. You're listening to the College Tribe Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Price. Episode 22. How about that? Next week is our final episode after the national title game concludes. You can find this episode at the College Tribe Podcast, that next one as well, and all previous ones on our podcast page at News Radio, News Radio, forgive me. I work for News Radio in the afternoons. ESPNPensacola.com. You can also listen to ESPN Pensacola on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. Episode 22, that's phenomenal. Episode 23 will be the last one when it drops on the 21st, right after the national title game. And as I said, we'll have a lot to talk about with that. But moving on to what's actually relevant tonight, Ohio State shutting down Texas 28-14. They won their semifinal. Not in the fashion that we perhaps expected, but they nonetheless won. I certainly didn't have this being the lower scoring of the semifinal matchups. I said that earlier. Yet here we are. And my main takeaway from the outcome is, while their offense left a lot to be desired, one can still make the argument that this was a dominating win for the Buckeyes. They not only doubled up a Texas team that had earned its way to the semis, but it held that same team to just 14 points. That SEC team, SEC, known for its interchangeable stud quarterbacks, entered the game averaging, 38.5 points in the playoffs? You just held them to 14 points? That's unbelievable. And it just confirms what we've already been smelling off of both of these teams. Ohio State, in its current form, is head and shoulders above everyone it encounters. As for Texas, it proves you just can't get out of your own way enough to be a contender. I mean, we said that about the Arizona State game. You couldn't get out of your own way. That's why I had Ohio State pulling away from you. I ultimately had them pulling away in a more offensive affair, but while I had the score completely wrong, they still nonetheless pulled away from you and won by double digits because you couldn't get out of your own way. Think about this. We've talked about Ohio State's speed helping them so far ahead of their opposition. And what did we see right before halftime? Just a couple of blocks being enough to set up some colossal screen pass touchdown, and that costed the Horns a lot of momentum going into the locker room, but more importantly, it cost them their 7-7 tie that they had just made. Texas botched the coverage on that play, and from there, it didn't take much for Travion Henderson to speed down the sideline. And what was the dagger of the game? Jack Sawyer being virtually untouched on his way to Ewers, causing a fumble that he then scooped up and took home. And don't even get me started on why you were in that position anyway. You were backed up to OSU's 8 on 4th down when it had been 1st and goal at their 1. So don't even get me started on why you were in that 4th and 8 position that Sawyer ended up beating you up on and putting the dagger through your heart on. Don't even get me started on that. The bottom line is that Texas's carelessness left them out of their element in big moments on both sides of the ball. OSU's hard enough to take on, but with big mistakes like those, you can't even dream of a win. So congrats, Ohio State. Even with struggling more in spots where we thought you wouldn't, there's no doubt that you should have won this game. And I want to go off on a tangent here, sticking with Ohio State. There's been some, I don't want to say criticism. I jotted that down on my script here. I don't want to say criticism. I'll change the word. I'll say there's been some jabs taken at Ohio State on social media. And I'm noticing it's becoming more and more common. With Ohio State beating up on all their opposition, you're hearing more and more about how they bought their roster. Yeah, well, they paid X amount of millions for their roster. Yeah, well, anyone's great when you buy a roster like that. Are you kidding me? It could just be me, man. I don't know. Maybe it's just my experience. I can't speak for everyone else, but I can't help but notice that this narrative became evident to me only after Ohio State started skunking SEC teams in the bracket. That's all I'm saying. They've beaten up on three teams now. Two of them were SEC. One of them was supposed to be a dark horse in the bracket. The other was supposed to be, they weren't supposed to be. They were the SEC runner-up. Ohio State beat up on both of them, and now we're hearing about, oh, well, they bought their roster. And it's one thing if you want to pick on them for that, but the inconsistency of it all is what annoys me the most. First of all, I'm going to go with my theory that this is a narrative that the SEC kind of picked up on. The SEC fans kind of started. Because as I said, I for one, did not hear about it at all until Ohio State started beating up on Southeastern teams. So assuming that it is SEC fans, assuming that I'm not making it up, assuming that it is them that started this, let the record show the SEC has been involved with payment scandals back before NIL stuff was allowed. And not only that, but a story that everyone but myself has seemingly forgotten about is a couple years ago, back when this NIL stuff first kicked off and we really heard about the lack of regulation, Texas A&M had the greatest recruiting class ever. Back when that was going on, I even said, yeah, Texas A&M, they don't have the brand to attract a class of that caliber, but they do have the money to buy it. Most likely, Texas A&M either bought some of those players, bribing them with money straight up, or bribing them with promises of money later. They probably did that to get some of that talent. Texas A&M, they haven't won jack. And I don't even think under Jimbo Fisher, because he was their head coach at the time, I don't even think under Jimbo Fisher they had had a top recruiting class in a year. Like of a certain year under him. But NIL is allowed. Texas A&M, with all their boosters and all their money, they are desperate to win. So next thing you know, Texas A&M has the greatest recruiting class of all time. Officially the highest rated ever. Yeah, that's mighty interesting. And nobody talks about that anymore. Nobody talks about how that SEC team did that. And you know why? Because the SEC continued to stink anyway. Texas A&M continued to stink anyway. And they still stink. They had five losses this year. And Jimbo Fisher is gone, mind you. There's that too. So this is just infuriating to me. This idea that, oh, well, Ohio State, yeah, anyone can win with that roster. Texas A&M couldn't. I wouldn't be surprised if we eventually start hearing some stuff about, oh, a player's transferring out of there, or a player's complaining on social media that he didn't get what he was promised a couple years ago. I would not be surprised at all if we heard a story like that. If you are going to criticize these teams, give these teams any grief, the least you can do is be consistent with it. Hold those SEC teams accountable for when they did it, when it was illegal. Hold Texas A&M in particular accountable for the headlines that were surrounding them when they had this just totally spur-of-the-moment, all-time great class. Hold them accountable for that. Then we'll talk about Ohio State. My goodness. That just irks me. I hate hypocrisy. I hate double standards. I'm not saying Ohio State didn't buy their roster. But in this day and age, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? I love how people are turning up their nose at them now, but they're ignoring all those other stories. Anyway, whatever. The time's come. Our final prediction of the 2024-25 college football season. The College Football Playoff 2025 National Championship Game. Da-da-da-da. Honestly, dramatic buildup aside, I hate to say it. I don't see this game being particularly thrilling. Truth be told, I felt that regardless of what we saw in the Orange Bowl, Penn State would have made for a better fight with Ohio State than Notre Dame because both teams had rather forgettable playoff paths. I mentioned Notre Dame's earlier, but Penn State had one as well. However, the Nittany Lions would be rematching the Buckeyes after a close loss to them in the regular season, and they're obviously rivals and blah, blah, blah. I may have already touched on that some last week. I can't remember, but either way, you get the idea. Bottom line is, I still feel that way. As for Notre Dame's postseason triumphs being forgettable, we still haven't seen the Irish face a title-contending team at its best and visibly outclass them on both sides of the ball. We haven't seen that. I'll give you another refresher of their playoff path. They beat Indiana. We knew Indiana wasn't a contender. You beat Georgia with a backup QB. And they were coming off a bye, which is kind of a blessing and a curse. And then you played Penn State, and you didn't outclass them. You squeaked past them. We have yet to see a title-contending team at full strength face Notre Dame and be completely outclassed. We have, however, seen far closer to that in OSU's path to the Natty. And I can't imagine that now all-too-familiar gap dying down against the Irish. So as I said before, Marcus Freeman, I was wrong about you, my friend. I now truly believe that you are the guy to lead Notre Dame until further notice. You clearly have what it takes to bring another national title to South Bend. But I just don't think your guys have what it takes to do it this year. Not against a team like Ohio State. With that said, give me the Buckeyes 37-17. I think that's fair. Why did my mic just shoot up? There we go. Yeah, sorry about that. Anyway, you've been listening to the College Tribe Podcast. I'm glad that my mic had that spiritual rise in volume to help me deliver my dramatic reveal of the final score. But yeah, I got the Buckeyes winning 37-17. We're going to get another blowout national title game. Nothing personal. That's just the way I see it. Ohio State's been head and shoulders above everyone else. It's not going to change now. Thank you so much for tuning in throughout this entire season. Season finale coming up, episode 23 on Tuesday, January 21st, with yours truly, Austin Price. I cannot wait to see you there, quote unquote. I won't be physically seeing you, but I'll feel it in my heart. We'll see you next week. Take care. Be safe.